There's a document which affirms important beliefs that we Unitarian Universalists hold in common, and it is called Seven Principles. You're familiar with that one? I'm sure you are. I'm going to read them. Please hold them in mind. The first is the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And the second, justice, equity, and compassion in all human relationships. The third is acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. And the fourth is a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. The fifth is the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. And the sixth is the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. And the seventh is respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. And if you study these very carefully, you notice they too are a web of interrelated beliefs, which is our commitment. Don't go too far, you won't be able to hear the truth. I'm delighted to be here again. Yes, this is the fourth time, normally when you were gone, and a part of my delight today is to be able to share in the leadership of this service with you. And even though we worked together for a year and we've never actually, as far as I recall, ever shared in the leadership of the service, so I'm delighted. I just have one thing I want to be sure about. Your glass is on the left and mine is on the right?
Yes.
All right. I want to be sure that I don't drink out of the wrong glass and catch divinity. Rodney Dangerfield was a comedian who built his entire career around the issue of non-respect. His famous line and recurring theme is, "I don't get no respect." Respect is an acknowledgement of worth. Dangerfield simply understood the centrality, underscored the centrality of respect in human experience by approaching it from its negative side. Here are a couple of his well-known comments. "My mother had morning sickness after I was born. I told my psychiatrist that everyone hates me. He said I was being ridiculous. Everyone hasn't met me." Now, Dangerfield's sense of humor may not be your cup of tea, but he does illustrate that the issue of respect is endemic to human experience. Indeed, it is one of the primary forces that drives the entire human drama. Being viewed as worthy is so imperative to our sense of well-being that we will do most anything for its acknowledgement, no matter how irrational, absurd, demeaning, destructive such might be. In 1955, James Warren Jones founded a movement which eventually came to be known as the People's Temple. Supposedly, was about creating a community where everyone was accepted as of equal worth. And social justice, therefore, was a non-issue. Feeling that American culture was too oppressive to pursue this dream, he persuaded 1,000 women, men, and children to move to a jungle setting in Guyana, South America, to establish this utopia. It was called Jonestown, interestingly enough. But things turned ugly because it was discovered that Jones himself was not exactly an egalitarian. So opposition arose, and some tried to escape. So Jones persuaded around 900 of this group to drink Kool-Aid laced with poison so they could enter a paradise beyond death that affirmed their absolute worth. This incident is an example of the extreme kinds of beliefs and actions we humans will engage in order to have our worth affirmed. Such behavior is so common in the world, we may come to see it as normal or just simply write it off as evil. I grew up in the Southern Baptist tradition, and as Christians, we believed humans were born unworthy. Therefore, we had to import our worth from outside of ourselves. And the source of this imported was our God. Now, most people of the world have subscribed to gaining their worth through importation. And aside from religion, the primal means has been through what I call the great cultural con. This con is very simple. Human worth is externalized and attached to status. It is converted into a commodity that is imported incrementally. And this importation is through two primary means. One is through accumulated wealth. The greater is the wealth, the greater is the worth. This worth is displayed to the populace through the things one owns, wears, eats, drives, dwells in, are experiences that are all superior to others. The higher is the worth, the greater are the social rewards, and the less are social penalties. Second way of importing worth in a typical culture is by achieving a position of status. The higher is the position, the greater is the worth attached. The social rewards and the exemptions accorded to this achievement is the same as that granted to the wealthy. Now, this importation scheme creates a social worthometer scale, and everyone will exist on that scale somewhere between its top and bottom. Normally, how one is treated in terms of respect and justice is determined by where one resides on the scale. And the closer to the bottom of the scale, the greater is one's utility for those who exist at the top. There's nothing essentially wrong with achieving either wealth or position in a culture. The achievement itself is not the issue. It is endowing it with social worth. It is treating people differently because of such achievement. It is gearing the system of justice and social reward to where one is on the culture's worthometer scale. It is glorifying, listen to this very carefully now, it is glorifying the drama of Downton Abbey as if it were natural and inevitable. It is this minimizing of the worth of those at the bottom of the culture's worthometer scale that Rodney Dangerfield was referring to when he made this sardonic joke. When I played in the sandbox, the cat kept covering me up. In the mid-1960s, I was living in Franklin County, North Carolina, which is just north of Raleigh. My job was similar to what in Unitarian Universalism was called a district executive. It was to facilitate programs and train leadership that would empower mission fulfillment. There were 38 Southern Baptist churches in my care. The nation was in the throes of the civil rights movement. The primary vocation in Franklin County was tobacco farming, owned by whites, labored by blacks. The whites lived in comfortable houses and had positive futures. Pardon me. The blacks were provided squalid shacks and miserable living conditions, along with low wages and no benefits. When I suggested that this inequality was unchristian, the reply was, "What are you talking about, Robert? We love our niggers." And when I suggested that referring to blacks with the derogatory term nigger was not Christian, they would suggest, "I just didn't understand black people." Then there was the church issue. Blacks could attend white churches, but they were required to sit in the balcony, or if not a balcony, the back pew. When I suggested that Jesus would find this seating requirement quite annoying, they would ask, "Why, Robert?" In contrast, when I visited a black congregation, I was welcomed and invited to sit on the front pew. Then there was a school issue. When the county school board sought to thwart integration through a clever deception, I exposed this to the FBI. An investigation ensued, and I became persona non grata to a lot of folks in Franklin County, including members of congregations that I was serving. My children were verbally and physically abused at school. There was a movement to dismiss me from my job. A cross was burned in warning on our front yard. Day and night, passers-by flung nails into our driveway. But this was mild treatment compared to what was directed toward black leadership. The windows in their cars and houses were smashed by rocks. Their wells were poisoned. They were retaliated against economically and treated with contempt. From this experience, I learned a primary lesson. Whether it is justice or injustice, both are symptoms of one's belief about human worth. These North Carolina Christians believed they were worthy. This worth had been imported from their God, who had redeemed them from their original sin. However, despite the fact that most of the black community held the same belief of imported worth from the same God, based on the same scripture, the white community chose to see the worth of blacks not from a Christian perspective, but from a cultural perspective. Blacks were at the bottom of the culture's worthometer scale and had minimal worth. Blacks played in the sandbox, and whites were the cat. In essence, the white community chose a double standard of imported worth to justify their prejudice. Now let me relate all of this to our seven principles. The first principle, in my judgment, and as Gretchen has said, I'm always right.
Almost.
Okay. The first principle is the key to all the rest, because the others are dependent upon it to become reality. It is belief in the inherent worth of every human. Now, our second principle is belief in justice, equity, and compassion in human relationships, which are all attitudes and activities that express commitment to the inherent worth of other humans. And the third principle is the acceptance of one another and encouraging spiritual growth in our congregations. This is a community goal which fulfillment is totally dependent on acceptance of mutually recognized worth. Our fourth principle is belief in a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. This is also a community goal intended to expand our wisdom for living, which requires the openness of dialogue of contending views that only happens through the embrace of mutual worth. As members of this congregation, you can disagree, but you will still be worthy because you will be embraced. And as ministers, we can disagree in our search for truth and meaning and debate because we embrace each other in terms of mutual worth. Our fifth principle is belief in the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and society at large, the baseline for everything democratic, and its permission to speak one's conscience without suppression is accepting the inherent worth of all involved. Doesn't happen without that baseline. The sixth principle is belief in the goal of world community, which is evidenced by peace, liberty, and justice for all. This is a lofty and idealistic vision that could only possibly happen if belief in the inherent worth of every human dominated global perspective. Our seventh principle is respect for the interdependent web of existence of which we are a part. Humans are a part of the whole, and the whole is only respected if the part respects itself. Everything we Unitarian Universalists believe and wish to happen in our society and world finds its root in this primal belief of the inherent worth of every human. Beliefs have consequences, and opposing beliefs have opposing consequences. And such consequences can either be life-giving or death-dealing. These conflicting views rise from an unchangeable historical principle. And here it is. Every human yearns to be viewed as worthy. Every human yearns to be viewed as worthy. The notions that human worth is inherent or is imported are opposing beliefs about how this yearning is fulfilled. And the consequences are equally opposing. Devotion to imported human worth is death dealing. Its consequence is competition, prejudice, greed, hate, slavery, destruction. On the other hand, devotion to belief in the inherent worth is life-giving. Its consequence is collaboration, respect, love, peace, freedom, and construction. History is shaped and is being done so at this very moment by these opposing beliefs and consequences. As I read it, and I read it right, the vast majority of people in history have subscribed to the belief that their worth is important. That human worth is inherent is a decided minority view. Why do you think this whole building is not packed with only standing room? We're a minority in terms of our perspectives about the inherent worth of humans. Since the fulfillment of imported worth promotes dog-eat-dog kind of living, while inherent worth is a simple matter of self-acceptance, why would anyone choose imported worth over inherent worth? I suspect there are two primary reasons. One is that the vast majority of people in human history are born into the lap of imported worth as reality. And the other is that the everyday living experience of almost all humans is geared to and immersed in the drama of imported worth. This is why Downton Abbey is popular across the entire globe. Makes no difference, the social order. Imported worth is the primary stance of almost every major culture that's ever existed. The culprit, then, is that almost all cultures are grounded in imported worth. Even if you believe your worth is inherent, you have to live in a culture devoted to imported worth. You leave your home or this congregation of mutual inherent worth acceptance and normally go out into community where you're gauged as worthy by your achievement or your status, your position, your wealth. Therefore, everything we Unitarian Universalists want our culture to become is dependent on us convincing it to change its belief about the source of human worth. And this is the glory of belief. Unlike a principle, it can change. And when this change involves a major belief, it is transformative. Many of us are here today because we did change our belief about our worth from being imported to being inherent. This belief about inherent worth is the very bonding of our community. It is what makes our religion different from most all other religions in the world. So our mission is to share this good news, is proclaim that humans are inherently worthy and how living this belief will positively transform all of our relationships. And is to model this transformation in our community life so that people can see it at work. Our mission then is to speak and model a transforming message about inherent human worth. Miss Martin Luther King Jr.'s message. He understood the value of law that made it possible for blacks and whites to eat at the same dime store lunch counter. But what he really wanted was a change of the cultural heart that made such issues irrelevant. And that change was a belief change about the inherent worth of all humans, irrespective of their skin color or social status. We thought, those of us who lived through it, thought the civil rights triumph of the 1970s was permanent. It felt so good. However, for the past 40 years, our culture has largely ignored this triumph in favor of continuing to practice all the death-dealing consequences of imported worth. While some very important gains were made in the 1970s, it was more a cultural law change than a cultural heart change. And even some of these laws have been repealed. Everything we Unitarian Universalists wish to happen in the world is dependent on the populace accepting and living the consequences of inherent worth. And here's another lesson from North Carolina. In my experience, I cannot love without respect, but I can respect without love. This means I can affirm the worth of others without loving them. In my judgment, love demands a devoted and sustained energy invested, and I simply do not have the personal resources to love a lot of people. However, I can respect a multitude at the same time, even those I have never met. On the coast of Georgia, there is an island called Jekyll. Up until the Second World War, many of the wealthiest people in America gathered there from mid-December through mid-April to enjoy their privileged camaraderie. Individual families built private cottages for their living convenience. Most of these cottages, which we would call mansions, still remain and can be visited. One cottage was built in 1917 by Richard Crane, who manufactured plumbing fixtures. This company still exists, and you will recognize its logo of a crane standing on one leg imprinted on current bathroom fixtures. I see this bird every place I go. His family cottage had 17 bathrooms with all the metal gold plated. Mr. Crane was viewed as of exceptional worth because he was of exceptional wealth and was treated accordingly. Now consider going into the toilet of most any public establishment in America and knowing that some faceless person cleans those bowls you use. Here's the test for when Unitarian Universalists will know we have transformed society with our powerful message about the inherent human worth. When the cleaner of the toilet bowl is viewed as of equal worth to the maker of the toilet bowl. That's when the revolution will have really occurred. And only till then. What we're dealing with in taking on the malignant and death-dealing belief of imported worth may be the most sacred cow in American society. Yet, it is the key to cultural transformation. But don't be discouraged. Just keep in mind Mark Twain's observation. Sacred cows make the best hamburger. Amen, and so be it.